this next section takes us from that information about reality and starts to relate it to the situation we find ourselves in. There are 20 years between these two photographs, and in that time, really amazing things have happened. So many people have gone from that to that, and it's an exponential curve that's gathering pace all the time. And people are starting to see what is increasingly there, that we are watching the unfolding imposition of a fascist global state, or communist global state. They're the same, either way. I'm sure people in fascist Germany and people in Stalinist Russia thought there was a big difference between the worlds that they lived in. Different names for the same basic control system. But I would suggest that if we stay only at the level of the five senses, only at the level of the world we see, banking scams, manipulated wars, Orwellian imposition, then we're not going to get truly what is going on. Because I say this, look at it. This world has been changing and is changing so rapidly in terms of all different aspects of this control system, the way they manipulate education, manipulate wars, put in the people they want as presidents, give us all this shite through food and drink, control the media, manufacture the global warming scam, Big Pharma, and 9/11, and all that stuff. And it's coming in such a coordinated way. So if we are going to think that this situation that we're seeing unfold goes back to a few men and women in dark suits or whatever sitting around a table saying, what's our next move? We are clearly massively missing the point. And the vast majority of people who over the last few years have started investigating this, they will not go any further. They will not go any further because A, their belief systems won't let them, often their religious belief system, but also they are fearing what other people will think about them if they go into some of these areas I'm going to go into now. What people make of it is up to them. My right to say it is up to me. So yes, it's not just people sitting around a table somewhere in the world discussing the next move. There's the level where we see this unfolding in the news and what have you. Then there's this other dimensional, non-human level to look at, as I will in this section. Then there's the level of the nature of reality, which I've introduced already. And then there's this whole stuff about the moon, which I'll get into in this section too. And the rabbit hole doesn't end there. It goes deeper and deeper and deeper. And the deeper you go into the rabbit hole, the more we understand what the game is, the more we can change the game. And it's all about the control and programming of perception. That's the only way the few, and it is a few, compared with the global population, that the billions can be controlled. Manipulating how we interact with reality, keeping from us that we are consciousness, putting us in these bubbles of our sense of limitation, and I can't, manipulating the way we decode reality and therefore making us see the world as the control system wants us to see it. That's the basis of all of it going through the day, because that's the basis of all of it going through the whole conspiracy. So yes, of course, on one level it does manifest as dark suit sitting around a table discussing the next move, but that's still the play out world of this conspiracy. It's not its origin. It goes beyond them into the advisors in the shadows, the Mandelsons in this country. Peter Mandelson, if he's not manipulating, he gets withdrawal symptoms, that man. And into the Rahm Emanuels, ditto in America, the controller handler of Barack Obama. It goes into deeper levels, beyond them, deep in the hidden secret society network. And eventually, it goes out of this dimension. And that's where this whole thing is really coming from. Beyond the frequency range of visible light. And it involves non-human entities, some of them people call the greys. The main ones, I would say, and have been saying for a long, long time, take a reptilian form. They operate outside, they can come into visible light, but in terms of the reptilian part of this, they can't stay here for that long. So people say, why don't they just come and take over? Because they can't, or they would. They can come for so long, but their vibrational difference, incompatibility, means they have to leave. They can't stay for long, although there are technological ways they can stay for longer. And they operate outside visible light, and they manipulate this reality through bloodlines, interbreeding bloodlines, that I'll come to. And we call them the Illuminati families. So, we operate with invisible light, but outside of that, sharing the same space, is infinite other worlds and realities. And if a so-called UFO comes into this reality, because it's coming into visible light from where we cannot decode, it just seems to appear out of flipping nowhere. Because what it's done, it hasn't actually come in, it's just changed its vibrational state to resonate with invisible light, and it's like, it came out of nowhere. And then how often do you see it? Honestly, mate, there was this bloody UFO, and it disappeared just in front of my eyes. What are you on, mate? You on the pop or what? What it's done is increased its vibrational resonance to go beyond on visible light, therefore, to the observer, it disappears. It hasn't disappeared at all. It's left visible light. And this range of frequency we call our world is being manipulated from vibrational frequencies beyond it. And Satanism is a network within visible light that interacts with these reptilian entities in various ways I'll get to before the end of the day. Places or areas of the heavens that come up, Orion comes up again and again in relation to these reptilians. And in terms of non-human visitations, so does the Pleiades, so does, in terms of the reptilians, area of the heavens they call the Draco constellation, which appropriately, coming through the word derivations, brings us draconian. And of course, draconian laws are the Orwellian laws coming in. Very, very appropriate. Sirius is involved as well. So, won't be able to get into this today, and there's a lot more to know anyway, but so is what happened to Mars, is all involved in this story, how it became the devastated place it wasn't before. And when I talk about these areas of the heavens, I'm not necessarily talking about those places with invisible light. Because just as we are multidimensional, so planets and stars, etc., are multidimensional. And just as a planet might be devastated within visible light, it's not necessarily devastated on other vibrational frequency levels of itself. Because the Earth, too, operates in visible light, but also multi-levels, like everything else. Another major part of this story is that when these reptilian entities started intervening, they manipulated human genetics through interbreeding. Not necessarily physical interbreeding, interbreeding through technological methods, and also changing human form by changing the messages, the information, I'll come to this before we finish this section, that the DNA is picking up. And through that, you can change a form by changing the information the DNA is picking up. And it's no accident that humans have massive, fundamental reptilian genetics. This part of the brain, which scientists call the R-complex or the reptilian brain, will be very, very important as we go through this second part of the day, because it's fundamental to how human behavior and human perception is manipulated to see the world as we currently see it. This interbreeding is talked about and recorded all across the world in the ancient accounts. Of course, I guess because it's the Bible, the best known is this section from Genesis. There were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them. The same became mighty men, which were the old men of renown. But that's just the biblical version. Got a frog in my throat, the reptilian going. All across the ancient world, you see similar stories and accounts of this interbreeding. Something else goes parallel with the reptilian story. Again, not just in the Bible with the Garden of Eden and all that stuff, which of course the serpent was dominant, but across the ancient accounts. And that is the connection between the reptilian intervention and what we call the fall of man. And again, this is universal. And these themes will come together again and again as we go through this next part. The ancient accounts, again, we're talking that part of the Yuga cycle, which they call the Golden Age, talk about the fact that there was a time when humans were so unbelievably different to how we are today. They were connected to higher levels of consciousness. They were in this world, but they were certainly not of it. They were capable of incredible feats, and they lived what we would call impossible lengths of time in terms of age. And then there was a sudden change, the fall of man, as it was called. What I call this is the schism. There was an energetic schism at the level of the metaphysical universe, the waveform-based information construct, and that, as it was decoded through into this holographic reality, obviously mirrored in the holographic play-out world the schism in the information construct. And this is a portrayal of that, a symbolic portrayal of that. Anything that happens here gets decoded through to there, and this is where the schism happened. It was like a distortion in the information. Thanks, mate. Cheers. You put the gin in, right? It was a distortion in the base information construct, and I'll be coming to how that happened. There were many consequences for this, and one of them was there wasn't just a schism in the energetic level of the world itself. There was a schism was passed through into human personalities. We became distorted also from the magnificence and harmony that we were before. And we went from that to this. And we're now at the point where we're coming out of that. And there was also genetic manipulation to stop us accessing ranges of frequency that we did before. This is a major reason, not the only reason, but it is a major reason why scientists call 95% of human DNA junk DNA, because they don't know what it does. This is the reason, not the only reason, but a major reason why we only use a fraction of our brain's capacity. This is why billions of cells in that bridge, the corpus callosum, don't seem to be doing anything. They've been switched off. We've been put into a state that disconnects us and therefore makes us controllable, makes us farmable. So you've got this reptilian group, and the ones involved appear to be relatively small in number, tiny compared with the global population, and this is why they're terrified of being exposed. That's a constant theme all the way through it, wherever you look. And they've imprisoned humanity, or sought to, in this tiny frequency range of perception called visible light. Another key aspect to this is that they created hybrid bloodlines specifically to be the middle men and women. They became known in the ancient world as the demigods, the people, the children of the gods, part human, part god, as these serpent gods were perceived. And they were to be, like I say, the middlemen and women operating in visible light for the outside visible light control system. And it's appropriate that the caduceus and the symbol of the medical profession is the DNA, in effect, portrayed as two snakes. Because to these reptilian geneticists, who were far, far ahead of where we are in public arena in terms of genetics and understanding, the DNA is a software program. And so they manipulate it for their own means. And this is crucial to understand the world that we live in. One seriously important aspect to this DNA, this hybrid DNA I'm talking about, is that it has eliminated what we call empathy. The ability to decode the emotion of empathy. Empathy is the fail-safe mechanism of all behavior. If I can empathize with the consequences for others of my actions, that limits my and balances my actions. If I have no empathy because I cannot empathize, then there are no limits. There is nothing that won't do. 3,000 dead on 9/11, who cares? Who cares? That's what we're dealing with. And this is vital to get across. If we look at this information on the basis of thinking I wouldn't do that, so they wouldn't do it, then we're going to miss the plot completely. Because that's not like that. No, you wouldn't do it. They would, and have no emotional comeback whatsoever. The reason for the interbreeding, the hybrid, is vibrational compatibility. These hybrids have a greater infusion of reptilian DNA than the general population, although we have a lot. And therefore, the resonance is sympathetic to the resonance of these entities operating just outside visible light. And through this resonant connection, like two radio stations talking to each other, the possessing entity outside of visible light can control the thoughts, actions, perceptions of the intermediary, the demigod. And of course, the theme of possession is as old as history, right up to the present day. We look at these people. All these pictures are by Neil Haig, by the way. Anything that looks like this. Great, great, great friend of mine, great artist. And this image symbolizes the fact that he looks at him with invisible light and he sees George Bush. Nothing else. What people don't see, because it's outside the frequency range of their decoding system, is there are entities around these people who are actually controlling these people's thoughts, actions, etc. A number of psychics have said to me around the world how they've seen people walking along the street or wherever, and then they've seen like an ethereal reptilian entity locking into these bottom two chakra points, the emotional level, one of them is, and floating around with them. And this is a kind of a good analogy. You know when there's scientists in a laboratory and they're trying to work with something that they can't touch because it's too dangerous? What they're working with will be in a tank, and they'll put gloves on, which allows them to be outside the tank but to manipulate inside the tank. Well, that is a very good symbol of what I'm talking about. These Illuminati bloodlines, these hybrid bloodlines, operate like those gloves, operating inside this reality. And Neil symbolizes these Illuminati families with invisible light as this bearded man. Whenever you see him as we go along, that is symbolic of the Illuminati families controlled beyond human sight by these reptilian entities. When the world started to recover from great geological catastrophes, which I'll come to in a second, there were areas of the world that stood out in terms of their abilities and potentials and advancement. These were some of them, and this area is particularly important to the bloodlines I'm talking about. The area that was once called Sumer, thousands of years BC, and became Babylon. This is why Babylon comes up in the writings of these people so often. And it's Mesopotamia, the land between two rivers. They didn't invade Iraq just for oil or just for anything. They didn't invade it for one thing, but multiple things. But one reason they're so obsessed with Iraq is because to these bloodlines in control of the world today, this is a very significant, almost religious piece of land of historical importance to them. As Sumer and Babylon broke up, these bloodlines started going walkabout. They became the royal families of the world. And what do royal families claim? The right to rule because of the divine right to rule. The Chinese emperors used to claim the right to be emperor because of their genetic connection to the serpent gods. And this is a theme all across the world between the serpent gods and royalty. They became the aristocracy and the royal families, claiming the right to rule because of their DNA. Just down the bloody road from here, we have a head of state in Britain to this day who is only head of state because of her DNA. Head of state because of her DNA. I actually made a complaint, nothing happened to it, but I made a complaint to the Race Relations Commission, or whatever they call it. They said, if you see racism, report it. So I reported the royal family. You would. You would. Because they go, racism, we must stop racism. All these bloody politicians go, well, get down to Buckingham Palace then. You're saying you can only be head of state, not only if you're bloody white, effectively, but if you only come from the same bloody family. Ridiculous. Anyway, it's always been and it still is. And so these aristocratic and royal families moved on. Eventually, when the people started to rebel against overt royal control dictatorship, these families, some of them stayed in the royal families overtly, and there's still some around, like ours. But these families moved into politics, into banking, into business, and became the dark suit, but they still perceived themselves as royalty, a special, because of this genetic connection to the serpent gods. And through the British Empire, the so-called Great British Empire, and the other European empires, as these bloodlines moved up into Europe from the Middle East, etc., they exported these bloodlines all over the world, and we saw them in power in what we call colonization. But there's two types of control. One has a finite life, one can go on forever until it's exposed. The one that has a finite life is a dictatorship that the people under dictatorship can see, touch, and taste. Communism, fascism, apartheid. People know where they stand, and eventually, therefore, they will rebel against it because they know what they're dealing with. The greatest form of control is a control you can't see. Prison without the bars. You can't see the bars because you'll just sit there. People do not rebel against not being free when they think they are. And that's the idea of replacing the colony control with another kind of control called freedom. So what happened is, as these colonies, like the United States as it became, etc., and all the others around the world, as they were given independence, what was left out in those countries were the bloodline, under different names, the secret society network that manipulates the bloodline agenda, and those countries have gone on being controlled ever since. But because they have the ability to have a vote every 4 or 5 years, they don't realize they live in a tyranny. And that's how it works, the prison without the bars, and until it's exposed, it'll go on forever. And so these kind of people, especially the Rothschilds, they are major, major players in this. They are the middlemen for the manipulation of this reality from these entities mostly outside of this reality. And what they've created is like a global transnational corporation. What you have with a corporation is you have a headquarters somewhere in the world, and then in each country you have subsidiary companies of that headquarters, that central point. And all the subsidiaries in the world carry out the policy of the central point. Well, what these Illuminati hybrid family networks have done is create exactly the same, but instead of companies, they are secret society networks. So you've got the center of the web in Europe, for historical reasons, at operational level anyway, places like London, not the British government, the secret society center in London. In Rome is another one, the Roman Church, Rome, and other points in Europe. And then in each country, you have families from the network in those countries whose job it is to run the networks that control that country's business, banking, politics, media, all of it. And so what you have is, from this central point in Europe, the center of the web, all these different places and countries all over the world then impose on their country what is being dictated here. And that's why, as I travel around the world, I see the same things being introduced in different countries at the same time, overwhelmingly justified by the same excuses. It's all a global network. It can be symbolized too as a web, like I say, with the Rothschilds real close to the spider, and all these different strands on the web are different secret societies, different semi-secret societies, transnational corporations, and all the rest of it. So when you see all these different names of these corporations that dominate the world in so many ways, and the pharmaceutical cartel, and the oil cartel, and all the rest of it, the biotech cartel, they're all different names or different masks on the same one face. And so you have this structure where Outside of visible light, you have the reptilian control system, comes down through the Illuminati families, and they control the people in power to push the world in a certain direction. Another way of looking at it here. You see, all these different people, these fight among themselves and all the rest of it, though if it gets out of hand, they get sorted. So these sit on the top of all these different countries. They control these different areas of their societies, and the people are then played off against each other. These buggers don't go to war. They tell these buggers to go to war. And if we stop going to bloody war, game over. But we do. Ridiculous. That's part of becoming conscious. So these people are just pawns in a game, in a way, genetic pawns in a game. They're just kind of shells to play out this agenda with invisible light. I mean, some batches are better than others, of course. So if you look at the principle of the Trojan horse, the symbol of the Trojan horse, coming into a society and not seeming to be what it is, though taking it over, and you put that on the face, well, you've pretty much got symbolically what we're talking about here. People send me pictures from around the world and stuff that they find on the internet and elsewhere, which have a kind of reptilian feel about them. I'm not saying these are reptilian eyes, it could be a trick of the light, but I've used it because it gives an indication of the number of people that have told me this all around the world, from all walks of life, how they've seen people shift in from a human to a reptilian state, and especially the eyes are the first to go. They describe how the pupils become reptilian. And interestingly, a great friend of mine has an associate who, I don't agree with it, but he's been doing a research project to develop iris scan technology, and it led to him looking very deeply into 2,300 eyes. And he said he knew nothing about what I'm saying, probably never heard of me. And he said to my friend, the amazing thing was that about 4% appeared to be of reptilian type and appearance. And that is a recurring number, in my research anyway, 4-5% seem to be of this hybrid nature. So these people are reptilian hybrid human reptilians. And you look at the eyes, but behind the eyes are something else. I had an experience with this guy, Ted Heath. He was Prime Minister of Britain from 1970 to 74, took us into the European Union as it became. And it's a long story, I've told it before, but he looked at me in a dressing room in a television station. And as he looked at me, this is what his eyes did. His eyes went completely black, everything. And as I looked into his eyes, it must have been like that for, I don't know, maybe a minute, 2 minutes. And as I looked into his eyes, I said at the time, it was like looking into two black holes, because you couldn't make eye contact because there was no contact. And it was like, as I know now, looking through him into this other dimension where he was really controlled from. This man, Ted Heath, oh my goodness me. My goodness me, the children that guy has tortured and killed. And I've been saying this since 1998 in print, and he was alive for many, 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 many years after that. And nothing happened. Why? Because it's true. And so these people are like hiding behind human form. And hey, arrest my case. Arrest my case. Ooh, you look tasty. And this lack of empathy in this hybrid DNA explains why these guys do what they do. Now, when you open your mind, instead of saying, it's not possible, it's ridiculous, when you open your mind and say, okay, I'm not going to just accept this stuff, but I'm going to flow with it and see where it goes, you find that this stuff I'm talking about is absolutely in your face when you bring it from the subliminal to the conscious. The oldest form of religious worship in the world has been taken back 70,000 years to an area of the Kalahari Desert in South Africa, and it is worship of the serpent or worship of the snake. This man, Reverend John Bathurst Dean, wrote a book, very, very good book, 1933, called Worship of the Serpent, in which he studied serpent worship around the world. This was his conclusion. It appears then that no nations were so geographically remote or so religiously discordant, but that one and only one superstitious characteristic was common to all. that the most civilized and the most barbarous bowed down with the same devotion to the same engrossing deity, and that this deity either was or was represented by the same sacred serpent. It appears also that in most, if not all, the civilized countries where this serpent was worshipped, some fable or tradition which involved its history directly or indirectly alluded to the fall of man in paradise, in which the serpent was concerned. What follows then, but that the most ancient account respecting the cause and nature of this seduction must be the one from which all the rest are derived, which represent the victorious serpent, victorious over man in a state of innocence and subduing his soul in a state of sin, as he would call it as a reverend, into the most abject veneration and adoration of himself. Like I say, wherever you go, it comes up. You find obvious representations of the serpent gods. These were found in graves of the Ubaid people that preceded Sumer in what we now call Iraq. These were the Nagas, the shape-shifting reptilian people of Asia. The Druids used to worship a serpent god called Hugh. If you play that word through, Hugh man becomes serpent man, appropriately. The Egyptians used to worship serpent gods and represent their pharaohs as a result of that in this way. You had the cobra coming from the headdress there. You had the cobra head gear itself representing the snake. You had the belly of the cobra. The cobra is a constant common symbol of this serpent race. In Central America, you had Quetzalcoatl, the feathered serpent god, and the Mayan version of it was Kukulcan, in places like Chichen Itza. Of course, right across Asia, Japan, China, etc., the very most dominant symbol of that part of the world is the dragon, which comes from this worship of the serpent gods. Folklore is full of serpent stories and what have you. When I first met Credo Mutwa, a long time ago now, he contacted me when I was going around South Africa, this Zulu shaman, the official historian of the Zulu nation, because he'd read in a book called The Biggest Secret that I'd introduced this reptilian stuff for the first time, and he said, "Mr. David, how do you know? How do you know about the Chitahuri?" And I didn't know about the Chitahuri, tell me. And he told me the story of African history, where the Chitahuri, which translates as children of the serpent or children of the python, had taken over the world in the very same way that other parts of the ancient world described it. This is a painting that he did of one type of this Chitahuri from ancient and modern accounts. And he showed me this called the Necklace of the Mysteries. It says a necklace, it's very, very heavy, copper, and it goes on your shoulders. How he keeps it on his shoulders, I'll never know, it's so heavy. And he uses it as the historian of the Zulu nation, the symbols hanging from it, to tell the story of Africa and the world in general. And pride of place on the front is a non-human entity with a willy in come-and-get-me mode and a human woman. And I said to him, "What's all that about?" And he said, "This is symbolic of the interbreeding of the Chitahuri and humans to create these hybrid bloodlines, these children of the serpent." And then I asked him, "Oh, by the way, that's copper now, but in the original," and this Necklace of the Mysteries, by the way, is mentioned in accounts 500 years old, and Credo reckons it's about 1,000 years old, and it has a flying saucer on it, very clearly, a flying saucer hanging from it, which the storytelling says that's how the Chitahuri came here. Anyway, this is copper now, but it used to be gold. Someone stole it, and they couldn't afford to put gold back, and that takes us to North Africa and Egypt, and the base story of the Egyptian myths, and that's the golden penis of Osiris, which all relates into this golden bloodline, this special bloodline. And when I said to Credo, why is it not reptilian, he said, because the Chitahuri, and this is the theme I've found all over the place, the Chitahuri said, "You must not portray us as we really are." Some people did, most people didn't. They had to do it symbolically. So they made it absolutely, obviously not human, but not reptilian for fear of the consequences. So we have the eagle on so many countries' flags and logos, including the United States most famously. You have the owls, invariably with the goddess of Babylon, Semiramis or Ishtar. You have the story of the angels, especially the theme of the fallen angels representing this reptilian race and interbreeding with humanity. And you have Horus, the son of God of Egypt, the virgin-born son, represented as a hawk, again with the reptilian imagery. This seraphim, one of the hierarchy of angels in Christian and Hebrew Jewish belief, seraphim word means snake or serpent if you take it back to its origin. You have the flying serpent disc, which is widely used in the ancient world. And another thing that they did was they symbolized the heavens as the upper ocean. We have the ocean that we have, obviously, and then you had the upper ocean, which was the heavens. And so they talked about the gods and the serpent gods coming in their heavenly boats through the upper ocean. And so you have a lot of marine symbolism, which doesn't relate to the sea, it relates to the upper ocean. And it's reading this. These bloodlines were known in the ancient world under different symbols and different codes, like children from heaven and earth, and children of the gods, children of the sky. And another big symbol of these gods, these serpent gods, were the watchers. They were called the watchers. This is widely, widely found. And that's why there's an eye, as Credo Mutua confirmed, on that hand on the necklace of the mysteries. That's the watchers, that's the serpent gods. And that's why we have the eye on top of the pyramid, the all-seeing eye on the dollar bill, and why that is a massive Illuminati symbol in the secret society network. They are the gods overseeing the pyramid of control. One way that they often symbolized these hybrid bloodlines in the ancient world was as part human, down to the bottom of the torso, and then the legs or the bottom part being a snake. You come across this a great deal when you research this stuff. This is all symbolic of this half human, half snake symbolism. Over and over and over again you see it. And the cobra, like I say, is very much a common symbol of these serpent gods, as is fighting the serpent gods and battles with them. Even the word Messiah comes from Mesa, the Nile crocodile, which they use the oil from the Nile crocodile to anoint the pharaohs. And even today in the British coronation ceremony, they symbolize that as part of our own ceremony appropriately. In the Bible, the devil is symbolized or described in reptilian terms. The old serpent called the devil and Satan, who deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into the earth and his angels were cast out with him. Fallen angels, again, the recurring theme. All these folk tales about kissing frogs and turning into princes, and invariably you get reptilian themes, all part of the same story. And people send me images from all over the world as a result of the information I put out. It's amazing how many times you see the symbol of reptile and humans, or part human, part reptile, or overseeing the gargoyles in the palaces and castles and churches of this elite are symbolic of that. And of course, over the last, 20 years or so, there's been a mass of reptilian symbolism in children's stories and children's entertainment. And then recently, I mean, you saw this, it's a quick one, this 16th century painting in the National Portrait Gallery of Queen Elizabeth I, they thought she was holding flowers because that's what someone had painted over. But with where? What's underneath is coming to light, and this is a representation of it. It was in one of the papers, again, holding the snake, very, very appropriate. And these aristocratic families, which became the hybrids, again, use reptilian, dragon, and all these other serpent images on their various coats of arms and what have you. And one of the centers, like I said earlier, is London. Not necessarily London, the great conurbation, but the city of London and the temple that runs into the city of London. The city of London, of course, being the great center of not just British finance, but global finance. And how appropriate that they, too, have the symbol of the flying dragon and the symbol of the Knights Templar secret society, a major strand in this web of secret societies, as the very symbol of the city of London. You pass these as you go into the city, of course. Another theme you find with images around the world is of serpents eating humans. And not nice, it isn't, of course, but they do eat humans. When these reptilians come into visible light, they use humans as their food, like humans use animals, cattle, sheep. And then you'll see the recurring theme all over the world. This is in Central America, the Mayan area. This is a painting by Credo Mutwa from South African myths of the serpent gods, the Chitahuri, eating humans. And this is Alfa Romeo. What's it doing there? What's it bloody doing there? Same thing. And in the garden of one of the palaces, or whatever you call them, mansions of Silvio Berlusconi in Italy, the leader and one of the world's most corrupt men, is again the same image. And outside of visible light, they feed off human energy, human emotion, especially, well, only low vibrational emotion, because that's all they can really access. And so they have to keep humans in a state of mental and emotional suppression so that we keep feeding out this energy, which they then absorb. And that will become relevant in the next section when I get into why paedophilia is so widespread among this elite. Because energy changes with the emotions we give out. When we give out love, it's a certain wavelength. When we give out hate, it's a very different wavelength. And the friend of mine in Japan has become very well known for taking water, name's Mr. Emoto, taking water, putting it in a container, and then he'll put words of love or hate or whatever on the side of it. Because when you write a word, that word may seem in the decoded realm as a word you can see and read, but in the vibrational realm, it represents a vibration. If you could see the vibration of writing the word hate to the word writing the word love, it would be dramatic. In fact, you're looking at it. Because what happens is, after he's put the word on the side of the water, he then freezes the water really, really fast. I've seen his laboratory where he does it. And then he photographs the crystals. This is the crystal from a water that had love and appreciation written on it. This is the crystal that had hate written on the side of the water. And he's done whole books about this stuff with all these pictures in it. And this is the energy that these entities absorb when they're outside of visible light, which is most of the time. And therefore, they have to keep us in a state that keeps producing that. All this vampire stuff, because they drink human blood with invisible light because it carries the human genetic code and allows them to hold their vibrational compatibility with this reality for longer before they have to get the hell out of it. That's why they drink so much blood. And then there's this thing about shape-shifting, where, you know, I've had a lot of, you know, laughter and ridicule, so what's bloody new about this? And people say, well, you can't go from a solid body to a solid body and back again. And I'm saying, do you know? I agree with you. Of course you can't. But that's not what's happening, because there is no solid body. It's all happening as a decoding system. There is no solidity. So what shape-shifting is you have a situation like this, and the front dominating from our perception of observation energy field is the human one. So we look at George Bush or somebody, and we see a human. But sometimes, especially at times of high emotion, this shift can happen where the reptilian field comes forward. And as it does so, becomes the dominant one, often briefly, the observer now starts decoding that. And then it shifts back, and you start decoding this. And to the observer, decoding that shift, creating the holographic reality in their head, which is where everything happens, to their observation, someone's gone from a human to a reptilian, and then back to human again.